welcome to the Asylum. And now, your hosts, Rick Flieger and Rick Briggs.
That's right. Welcome to the Asylum Fantasy Sports Show. Rick, coming to you from the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio.
It has been an eventful day. Let me just tell you that, Mr. Flieger. It has flown by. What started off a little rocky.
Yeah, wasn't that. We'll get into that a little bit later. Wasn't the best start, but just coming back from Media Day, coming back from some one-on-one interviews with the 2014 class and prior Hall of Famers. What an amazing time, Rick. It was a blast.
Certainly was. And I'll tell you what, we have exclusive interviews with Ray Guy, Walter Jones, Andre Reed, Aeneas Williams, Claude Humphrey, Derek Brooks, also Hall of Famer Harry Carson. We also have sound bites from Michael Strahan. We have them from Steve Largent. It has just been a heck of a day.
Yeah, no doubt. When did Michael Strahan, Rick, become Elvis? It is amazing to see folks flock to him. It is so impressive. I was almost waiting for that petulant little blonde he does that other show with to show up, the way that the women were swooning. But a great guy, a funny guy. Weren't able to get any questions in with him, but really engaging. All these guys, so impressive, and you could tell how humbled they are by this moment and what it means to them, and so gracious with their time with some media types like us.
Oh, you're not kidding. I'll tell you what, like you said, each and every one of them were very articulate, very gracious, approachable. Yeah, I was standing there 2 feet away from all of them. They look you right in the eye and give you a good, honest, genuine answer, and that is really impressive.
Right, and they don't have to do it, I think. I'll tell you, for me, Rick, this is the first time it has sunk in for me, listening to these gentlemen answer these questions, looking them in the eye while they're thinking about it and reflecting back on their careers and what this moment means. This is the first time it's sunk in for me what this moment means for these guys and what it is and just how impressive of an accomplishment it is, and it's not lost on these guys. You see the me guys we always talk about and we complain about in the NFL. I think when you get to this point and reflecting back, I was truly impressed, and I was humbled to be a part of it.
Oh, it's one of my favorite part on in an interview. I was standing over there with Derek Brooks, and he was talking about one of the questions came in, you know, because he'd basically been going through a lot of this with his son.
Right.
And a call came in and he went through, and of course we'll play a lot of this stuff, but he was talking with Willie Lanier earlier on. You probably don't remember.
I do remember. Okay. Willie Lanier.
Just awesome middle linebacker, Kansas City Chiefs. And his son says, well, you were really listening to this guy. And Derek Brooks, you know, said he looked at his son. He goes, well, son, man, you know, it's Willie Lanier.
Right.
And he says his son's Googling Willie Lanier.
And I've had to do that.
In a few minutes, he goes, he really was good, wasn't he, Daddy? Yes, you know. And it was just – and I think it strikes them because these are the guys now where in a few years – their sons are going to be saying, well, you know, this is Derek
right,
Brooks, and
Derek
they're going to be
Brooks.
Googling them because and Steve Largent hit it as well. You know, the fame and everything, it's fleeting.
Right.
This is permanent.
Yeah, this is forever. And you go into, if you haven't gotten a chance to come here to Canton, you got to do it. You go into that hall, it almost looks like an amphitheater with all the busts in it. It'll about put you to your knees. It's so impressive, the greatness in the room. And I like seeing athletes at the level of the athletes getting into the Hall of Fame this weekend being humbled themselves to be part of such an exclusive fraternity.
Oh, it certainly is. And they know full well where they're going,
right,
who's all in here, and so forth. And, you know, it was interesting, Andre Reed, you know, putting a little shout-out, you know, Tim Brown needs to be here.
Yeah.
I fully agree, which is why I brought it up. And, Tim Brown not being in here, he's one of the guys, for example, one of the quotes wasn't today, but I've heard over the years, if San Francisco would have drafted Tim Brown instead of Jerry Rice, which they almost did,
yes,
we may not be talking about Jerry Rice in the same light.
Do you think?
Because of that offense. Oh, sure. I mean, the West Coast took everything by storm back then. And, you know, Tim Brown could have been that guy.
He very well could have been. He was that town of a guy. And I know, and I don't know if we have that sound bite.
And what a career ready. He had anyway.
Oh, yeah, no question about it. And you talk about Reed and you know, something else he said. I don't know if we have that soundbite coming up. However, it's going to get tougher for guys like Tim Brown because you've got the Marvin Harrisons. You've got
right.
It won't be long. You'll have the Randy Mosses, Rick. You'll have the you name them, the Terrell Owens, these other guys. Is it what is it, 5 years out, you start to get the voting? Now, it's very rare to have a first ballot guy, but over the next, if he doesn't get in over the next 5 or 6 years, there's some other wide receivers coming down the pike who, by the sheer era they played in, whose numbers are going to be better than a lot of these guys, and you wonder what it's going to do to somebody like Tim Brown, who really should be in here right now.
I posed that question to Claude Humphrey, and this is what he had to say about it.
ESPN has been a player for historically black colleges in definitely different generations. What's it mean to have, you know, a younger guy like him come up and go in, and an older guy like you go in to still represent that?
Well, basically, to me, it doesn't make any difference, you know, who else goes in with me, just as long as I get in. I waited a long time to get in, so, you know.
They always talk about their colleges when you're here, you know. They always brag about it.
Well, you know. Well, my college now, if you want to brag, in 4 years, I lost 5 games. And with 2 years, we were historically black college national champions. So, you know, we won a lot of games in college. And we had a good football team there. So, losing, we didn't do a lot of losing.
Did you have other players from those teams make the NFL?
Yeah. The year before the 65 season, I think we had around 13 players to go in the NFL. That might be a record for players going in from a historically black college.
Wow.
Yeah, being full well, you know, I remember you playing quite well. Do you think, as time goes on, the way the media is now, especially on today's players, do you think the longer it goes for some of the older players, it's tougher to get in? There's so much more notice put on the players of today than in your era?
Yeah, I definitely do. It's funny, but if you're a lineman, offense or defense, people tend to forget you. I mean, if you're a running back, you got the stats to set up there. And if you were best on your team and you ran for 20,000 yards in 5 years or something like that, the stats are there, so it keeps people alert to it. But in my case, since they didn't keep sacks, they had nothing to keep me fresh on their mind, so I think that definitely had hurt me, you know, as far as getting to be a Hall of Famer. It was just, for me, I think it was more or less that there were a few guys in high positions in the NFL that remembered, and I think they kept stirring the pot, and that gave me the opportunity to get in.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Rick, another interview you did that I loved was with Aeneas Williams. I got to tell you, Rick, this is a guy, I remember him playing, but I got to be honest, I don't remember a ton about. He was out there in St. Louis / Arizona, whatever Cardinals team he was a part of. You didn't see a whole lot of him in this area before the Red Zone Channel, before the NFL Network. And he's a guy I feel remiss that I don't know a lot about, but wow, what an engaging guy.
Yeah, he played on the Rams, too, I believe, on the greatest show on turf on defense. Got a little overshadowed there.
Right.
But I remember him well, like you, not one of these Neon Deons where everyone was talking about him all the time. But when you brought up Aeneas Williams, you knew what you were getting into
right
against him. And I tell you what, you know, talking with him, what an intelligent guy. I mean, honest to Pete, it just, you know, he was answering every question just with a lot of thought and foresight. And, you know, it was a great time listening to him talk.
Yeah, we'll hear the question he answered for you in a minute. But before that, and I don't know if we'll have that audio put together, but one thing I did like, he mentioned, you know, nowadays we have Revis Island. Well, before that, there was Aeneas Island.
Right.
And I like that. Still a little bit, as humble of a guy as he was, a little bit of hubris in something you need to do, and that what these athletes have to be to reach the level they did. I like that, Aeneas Island.
Exactly. And, you know, when I talked to him, I did ask him, you know, about different offenses and players? And were there a different player or a specific player or specific scheme that he did not like to cover? And before we play his answer, he actually elaborated into he would like to see a lot of these interception records and everything broken since there's so much passing nowadays.
And he said they should be. It is what I like. Not only they'd like to see it, that they should be. So, Rick, let's go to the tape. Let's go to the question. Rick Briggs from Asylum Fantasy Football directly to Aeneas Williams, and here's what he had to say.
Now, if you could talk a little bit about the pressure playing in the Bayou Classic as opposed to some of the bigger games in the NFL, because I don't think people from around the country realize how big the game is for you guys.
Now, I tell people you don't want to go to heaven until you go to Bayou Classic. And for those that don't know, Bayou Classic, it's Southern and Grambling. And I played in the Superdome for some of my high school games. And so at the end of the season, and it's always both schools forfeit the opportunity to play in the playoffs, the 1AA playoffs, because the revenue generated, and it's always that Saturday follows the Thanksgiving. So people come from all over the world. And being exposed to it and driving down Canal Street in the bus, police escort, and going up to the dome and being matched up against Jake Reed my last year and getting Bayou Classic MVP, even though Grambling had beat us. There's so many memories, and particularly with my coaches there, Marino Chasm, Gerald Kimball, Percy Dewey, my defense coordinator, that allowed me to walk on. As I said, in the SWAC, and that's what a lot of people maybe don't know as well, I played against Alcorn State's Cedric Tillman, Torin Small. Those are pro receivers, professional receivers. Jimmy Smith, Fred Barnett, those were receivers at Jackson State. They all played in the pros. Jake Reed, Fred Jones, they were at Grambling. And then there was another pro receiver that played at Texas Southern. So a lot of people don't realize I was playing against that caliber of guys even while I was playing in the Southwestern Athletic Conference.
Is it a little bit overwhelming this weekend? You probably got a lot of old friends. You got people high school, college. I mean, your sophomore's probably blown up.
It can be overwhelming, but I've just decided, hey, I won't be able to return every call. Keep my voicemail empty so they can leave messages, and then I direct them to people. My wife has done a terrific job of preparing everything, but I've decided not to be overwhelmed. I've decided to relax. I've decided not to be overwhelmed about the speech. It's I'm enjoying the moment, and because all of the Hall of Famers that have talked to me, they said it's going to be a blur, and you're going to be everywhere, and they say enjoy the moment. So that's what I choose to do.
Those St. Louis Rams teammates you had at the end of the been in touch with them? They give you any advice?
Yes, absolutely. Torrey has texted me this morning. Marshall was one of the first guys that I saw the next morning after I got the announcement. He and I were both crying together in the streets of New York. Kurt Warner, my friend, has also reached out to me, and a number of them will be here. So I'll get a chance to see him. London Fletcher, and a guy that I think should have Hall of Fame consideration, but I've already told the guys, told Kurt as well as Torrey, Marshall started, got the seat hot, I'll keep it warm, and then soon a bunch of them will be in the seats as well.
Yeah, you're representing the defense. Everybody talks about the greatest show on turf, but you were on the other side.
Yeah, the reason I end up there is because they won the Super Bowl, obviously, with the greatest show on turf, with an outstanding defense, and then that next year they still had a great offense, and it didn't go so well with defense, so I get to come in with 8 new starters, along with Coach Lovie Smith as defense coordinator, and Coach Martz revamped the entire defense, and I got to lead the defense, but the heart and soul of the defense was London Fletcher and his influence. I never had to worry about Terrell Owens going a 5 yard across the middle. I told him, hey, I don't have to cover you 5 yards. I'll take everything else, because if you go in there, that guy number 59, he'll have some things to say to you, and I won't have to worry about you going back. But I'm just warming the seat up for all those great guys. Yeah.
You did a great job on both ends of defense, playing the run, moving from corner to free safety. That's the skill in itself that a lot of people don't understand. But I want to ask you, what went into your preparation so that way you always were in the right play to make a play on the ball?
Well, the first thing, when you talk about both physical corner as well as being able to intercept the ball and cover corner, that was intentional. At Southern University, when it looked like, I think by last year, that I was going to have a possibility of playing in the NFL, I wanted to be a complete cornerback. So I looked in the NFL and I saw, okay, who were the cornerbacks that would fit the complete cornerback description? Well, for me, I used two guys. The physical corner at that time before he moved to safety was Ronnie Lott. The bump and run man-to-man guy was Frank Minifield. So what I did, believe it or not, while at college, and my teammates still teased me and thought I was crazy when I did it, I went and got a shirt and I got spray painted on the back, Mini Lott. And I would walk around Southern's campus and people start calling me Mini Lott, Mini being facetious, but I was serious because my parents taught me the importance of a vision. So once I had that vision intact, that's what allowed me to have that mindset that I wasn't just a cover guy, but I also wanted to be counted on in the run game and a physicality as a defensive back.
What are some skills that you acquired on the field that you were able to translate off the field?
Accountability. You know, the NFL is a unique thing. We watch ourselves every day. And you have to face whatever you're doing wrong, and you get to compliment yourself for the things that you're doing right. And accountability and the ability to follow instructions. When a coach calls a play to, when I say accountability, for that coach, because here's how it went. You have Revis Island now, but it was Aeneas Island before him under Buddy Ryan. And Rob Ryan, my defensive back coach, under his dad, Coach Buddy Ryan. And what I learned was, on Wednesday when we would get the defensive game plan, all the defense got a whole booklet on the game plan on the upcoming opponent, and then I would get a package of just one receiver. So I was, whether it was Michael Irvin, Jerry Rice, I was assigned to that one guy the entire game. So the accountability and be a player that could be trusted. And out of everything I just said, I wanted to be a player that the coaches can trust. And that's what I parlay, whether it's with my wife, whether it's with my children, whether it's with the Spirit Church, the congregation, or with the Legends community that I work with the NFL. I wanted to be a person that it could be counted on. Thank you. Great question.
Was there a player, or was there more of an offensive scheme that you did not like to cover as much?
No, it didn't matter. Matter of fact, I tell the players today, I hear so many talk about the advent of the passing game and how it's more passing. I'm telling these guys who are currently playing, work on your ball skills. Someone should be shattering interception records. You know, these are goals that I had. Dick Knight, Train Lane, his rookie year, 14 interceptions. That has not been matched in a single season. I knew Paul Krause's 81 career interceptions. So this is the advent, and this is why I love pouring into the current players. I want to see these records broken because they're living in an era where guys who can intercept the ball should be fairly successful.
And that was Aeneas Williams. That was a great interview there. I tell you, my favorite, quite frankly, was Ray Guy. And he was the first guy that I went over to and was interviewing. And he was very engaging with everyone that asked him questions. And, you know, he was – I think it means a lot more to him coming in as a punter. He was very humble, answered a lot of questions about, you know, why am I being drafted first as a punter and so forth. And there was a lot of uneasiness with him. And, you know, the records that he set, you really don't remember him that much.
The tail end of his career, I remember.
But here's a guy that they created the hang time clock for.
Yeah, that's impressive.
I mean, he had an average of like 42, 43 yards a punt, but it's basically at 42, 43 yards a punt, you don't necessarily think that's all that impressive. But when the defensive guys are going down there and waiting for the ball to get there,
yeah,
you know, because it's so high, and that is extremely impressive. And let's not forget, he played defensive back in college. He was a great athlete, good arm. He's a backup quarterback for the Raiders for years as well.
And here's the thing with him, you talk about the hang time. I have to believe he's going to be the only punter probably that ever comes into the Hall of Fame. And to your point, he's not in it because he booms the ball 55 yards like a lot of the modern guys today. He revolutionized the punting position. with the hang time, with being able to get the amount of air under the ball he did. So until somebody, I don't know what else could be developed at some other point, but until somebody else is a pioneer of something, I don't think, and I still don't believe, that the position is going to get any respect. And he's here for that reason and that reason only, the hang time, the invention of the hang time clock, all based around what Ray Guy did. He was the innovator of the modern punter.
Exactly, and that was basically the premise of my question. I asked him that the precedence that he set as a punter.
Right.
You know, now that he's in the hall, you know, I ask him, do you think that this will actually give a little more credence and respect to the position of punter? And here's, he elaborated on it, you know, quite a bit.
Kind of a weight off your shoulder, and I might want to say it's been a long road and all that, but now that it's here and it's getting ready to be finalized, it feels great, and it's a great honor.
You've got so much support over the years from whether former teammates, former coaches, current punters, kickers.
Yeah.
What's meant for you to have that support and all these people advocating for you to be?
Well, that's what makes it even better. I mean, from my standpoint, is that knowing that the people that were behind me, and where it was coaches, family, you know, friends, whatever it might be, and you know, they probably wound up in the later years probably wanting it more than I did, per se, you might want to do, but they were always there, they were always encouraging, you know, and things like this when it didn't happen, and you know, they were real upset, but they kept pushing and saying, "This don't worry, it's gonna happen." So, you know, now that's over, they're relieved, I'm relieved, so we're going to enjoy the moment and just have a good time.
So many years in the Raiders organization. What did that organization mean to you in your career and your development?
Well, that organization was something that I could not ask for a better scenario. You know, you're going from a small hometown in Georgia to, you know, Southern Miss, which was not very big at that time when I was there, but and then you go from there all to the West Coast to a bigger city and the National Football League. But I was not that familiar with the organization as far as the Oakland Raiders concerned, because they have not even been in existence that long, you know, the AFL, you know, when they split. But once I was there the first day on, I mean, it's like I actually have been there the rest of all my life, because the background and the style and the thinking and the characters, the players that were there and the coaches and all that were very similar to my background. You know, it was a family. Still is a family. And it made my transition from college there perfect. I mean, I was worried to death about going out and, you know, start, you know, my career with the Raiders, knowing that I'm the number one draft choice as a punter. I was thinking always, you know, not so much as what the outside people were thinking, but it's what the internal part were thinking from the player standpoint that were there. How would they accept me, you know? And I found out in years later, it did enter a lot of them's mind. What the hell is Al thinking about, you know, drafting a punter? But, you know, after the first day there, I mean, they knew I was more than a punter. I was a team player, and I was part of their team already, and hadn't even played down yet, you know, or a preseason game. So that transition was very easy and made my job a lot easier.
Hang time and so forth. Do you think maybe this translates more respect to your position?
Probably, because I think it was something that was a little bit a step higher than normal, what the Raiders were used to, or the public was used to, as far as the, you know, a person kicking a football and making it go higher and longer and where you want it. I think it was. I mean, I've never set out to, you know, to set standards and things. I enjoyed playing the game itself. I wanted to play in any capacity that I could, you know. Now, of course, if I had my brothers, I'd have rather played defense too, along with doing the punting and the kicking, you know. But, you know, when I went to do one thing, I knew the importance of that anyway. Just, you know, going from playing free safety all 4 years at Southern Miss, and plus doing all the kicking, I knew the importance. But to wound up just being a specialty, from a kicking standpoint, I knew the importance of it, so I had more time to focus in on the more in depth on the mechanics and the fundamentals of what I had done coming into this, and I was able to make it even better, you know, by doing different things in certain situations. And but yeah, to know now that the, I don't know if you call it a legacy, you might want to say, that I have made, you know, in the years and all that, that's great. I love it, because what I have learned on my own, basically, not from the help of others and anything. I mean, I had help from the good Lord upstairs, but to be able to go out into public, you know, every summer and all that, and work with young youth athletes and teaching the art of kicking and punting and snapping and all that, it's a privilege for me, because it's something I learned, and I want to give it back to them. And you know, maybe, who knows, maybe on down the road in the next 20 or 25 years, one of the kids I have taught or something will be taking my place here. You know, one day he will be sitting on the stage at the Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio as an inductee. So, you know, if that's what it's meant to be, then I'm proud to be that leader.
What would you say is the most under-recognized aspect of a professional athlete?
Oh man, I don't know. That could be a lot of categories. From what I've heard all through the years, especially from a punter standpoint, you know, it doesn't take an athlete to do that. It doesn't take an athlete to punt a football. But I think people that have not ever performed the act of being an athlete and never got an opportunity to play any kind of sports, I don't think they really realize the depth and the inner ability that people have to play a professional sport. It takes a special person. You got to have a special talent or gift, you might want to say, and you got to be able to go use that wisely in your profession that you choose. So I think if people really knew what it really took to be performed an act on the competitor's field, I think a lot of them would have a lot more open vision of what they're seeing now and what these guys go through. So things like that, I think we're getting there. Sooner or later, we're going to get there.
Rick, in a sea of guys, and you like to bring up a lot that I probably didn't see this guy play, that guy play. I do remember Derek Brooks playing. This guy was impressive. He was a terror at that linebacker position, and a guy I was actually a fan of. You know, and another guy playing in a city in Tampa Bay where I don't think he got the recognition, where if he'd have played, Rick, in New York or somewhere in that fashion, played for Dallas, you'd think about this guy 100% in the top five of linebackers who ever played the game. Being down there in Tampa Bay is a little bit forgotten. I remember him playing, and I was a big fan.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't really buy so much the cities. They don't get the recognition. Look, we all know about Warren Sapp. We all know about Leroy Selman.
Right.
And Derek Brooks certainly isn't going by the wayside, is forgotten. And but I agree with you. It's not New York. It's not that kind of media attention. But, yeah, it struck him.
Right. And you're only
There's
going
no question.
But and why I say that, Rick, you're only going back 10, 15 years where you had your local game, whoever Dallas was playing it for, at least for us for whatever reason, up here in our market, and then Monday Night Football and Sunday Night Football. You didn't have access to every game, and believe me, in those days, even in Derek Brooks' days, Tampa Bay wasn't playing on Sunday night and Monday night. They didn't have the primetime games, so I didn't get to watch him play as much as I wish I had.
Yeah, you're right, exactly there. And you didn't have the package where you could watch every game and so forth. Yeah, you're exactly right there. So it was a little more localized. But, you know, like we mentioned before, he's with his son and just taking it all in. And he had some pretty insightful comments on what it really meant.
Right. I love this answer, and let's step aside and hear what Derek Brooks had to say.
You walk that line of trying to give him the knowledge that he needs to make the good decisions,
mm-hmm.
and then just being that support system that he needs as a father.
For me, that's easy because I'm always his father. When I'm watching him, as his dad. I answer all his questions, and I wait for him to bring them. And whenever he asks a question, that allows me to get in my knowledge without, you know, impeding on anything else that he's doing. So, you know, we do a great job of keeping that balance, because I think once, you know, you cross that line, you get into coaching now, you know, it creates an expectation that he may not be comfortable with. My son, he's comfortable in his own skin, and he knows I love him. You know, I'd rather he go cure cancer. But he wants to play football, and I'm going to support him as a dad, and I'm always watching him as his dad first.
You're going to be honored at halftime of the Florida State Notre Dame game this year. Can you talk about what that
I
means
am?
I think so.
Okay.
With Walter and Fred, I think, all Hall of Famers. Okay. XO Scott, right? Yeah. Oh, that mean, you come around a lot, obviously. You come around a lot, obviously. What will that mean to be honored along with Walter and the other Hall of Famers?
We're excited. You know, as I said, we doubled our number, adding to Fred and Dion. And I expect us to be undefeated at that time. And we're leading at halftime, so our ceremony can be very short and we can finish the game. But it gives the university a chance to show their appreciation for what we've done after we left. And, you know, it'll be Walter's first time having a chance to come back since he left because he played on the West Coast. So I'm there all the time. So I'm more excited to see Fred and Walter receive the love from the fans and from the university that I've been able to stay in touch with as I stay in the state of Florida.
Cool. Thanks, Derek.
All right, take care.
Well, you kept your emotions in check always as a player, and we saw you let it go at the Super Bowl after the touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
Will you let your emotions take over the
I don't know, Rick. I'm trying not to anticipate how I feel.
Yeah.
You know,
just be in the moment.
The moment happens, it happens. If it's don't, it doesn't. It's still a great moment. But
oh, sure.
You know, time will tell.
Has
you know,
been
the fact, I guess the fact that I'm going first, I don't know if that's pressure for emotion or pressure to happen. I probably just try to speak and sit
out.
Get out of the way. You are under orders from your wife to have fun. She's anxious for you to have fun. Are you following through on that? Or
Did
she even have to tell you?
Oh, no. We've been having a blast. Again, it's... You know, even last night, I brought our family coming to visit us. Everyone made it in safely. That was our biggest worry. So, yes, I am really having fun. Like I said, when I'm around these guys, is it kids in the candy store? Absolutely. You know, but I'm still waiting to go purchase something. I'm still in the store. You know, I haven't went to the register yet and probably won't because that's how much fun I'm having being around them, to hear their stories, you know, to hear the guys, you know, talk about how they went against each other in the 60s and 70s and beat up on each other.
Like what guys were talking today about?
Well, you know, I just love the stories. You know, I could walk two, just it's for everybody in that room just got so much respect for each other. And then they talk about other teammates that are not Hall of Famers, but it was a big part of their rivalries. You know, those things are exciting, you know, for me to hear. It's like you're a rookie again. You know, you put a muzzle on, you take notes, and, you know, you listen as hard as you can, you know, and that's what we're doing.
So
then I take down a note or two on my phone so I don't forget who said
really?
What. Yeah, but it's been fun.
Who spoke to you today? Because it used to be that, you know, Deacon Jones was the guy.
Oh, no, Willie Lanier, he's kind of, I guess, the ambassador that got everything going. He emceed the luncheon, so I'm assuming Willie Lanier is the guy that's been chosen.
Lofton said he's like a senator or congressman the way he talks.
Who?
I'm talking about Lanier. Lofton said that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He said you close your eyes and you think you're talking to a senator.
Yeah, he's very, and the thing, man, he set the standard, you
and
know,
the first
at our position.
Linebacker, yeah.
And he's having a 15 minutes last night, he's having a conversation with me about my hair and my game. I'm like, this really Lanier, you know, I walked away. Like, and my son's like, man, you seem really excited talking to him. I said, son, that's Willie Lanier.
Is there one guy that has a little more
because he goes to Google.
Oh, yeah,
he was good. Yes, he was.
Derek, is there one guy I'm thinking about, Jim Brown, maybe for something, you know, that one guy with that presence that nobody else has?
Yeah, it's obviously amongst that room and, you know, there's a lot of alpha males in there, but it's certain guys that have reverence. And for me, every one of them have reverence, and then there's another level.
Another level.
I guess with time, I'll figure out what that next level is.
Whatever that level is, Jim Brown's that.
Yes, he is.
You're going to be the guy that goes, well, Derek Brooks, sir. Google,
yeah. Yeah,
could
right.
be. Could be.
Is there one guy when you came here says, there's a question I want to ask one guy here?
No, Martin, I just wanted to shake all their hands and tell them thank you. I've not gotten them all yet.
Oh, you didn't get them?
I've got 3/4.
Another guy that was not, I don't know, everybody's different, don't get me wrong. He was, you know, Andre Reed in his right. I think when you look back and you mention Andre Reed, you think of, Tim Brown.
Right.
You think of Chris Carter. Name somebody else. Right there in that era, the same ilk.
Right.
And he was one of the top receivers, obviously, of that day. Went to 4 straight Super Bowls with Buffalo. And, you know, that's an amazing accomplishment. A lot of people kind of brush that off. Oh, they lost 4 Super Bowls. You know, they made 4 Super Bowls in a row. Yeah, they're disappointed.
Ask Cleveland Brown fans if they would take losing right. 4 Super Bowls in a row. I'll bet you they would take it.
Yeah, there's no question about that. And I think it's more or less a weight off of his shoulders because I don't know, to me, if it was a question of if Andre Reed was going into the hall, I think it was when. And if not, they'd probably tear the place down after a while.
Right. Because, they should.
Yeah. And I think he approached it that way because to him, he said that he could take it or leave it, but so many people in his life,
right,
you know, that helped mentor him and his family and so forth, meant a lot more to them, I guess, than it did to him.
Yeah, and he made mention of that year in and year out over the last several years. His family would throw a party when the inductees were named, and for so many years he wasn't a part of that group. And the excitement and what it meant to his family and to his mother specifically, he said at one point that her comment was always she hoped it happened before she ended up in the grave.
Right.
And so that's what it really meant to him. And look, Andre Reed, he's a guy, Rick, I forget about a little bit. When you talk about your Tim Browns, your Jerry Rices, in that era, and basically, if you look at the numbers, Rick, the greatest yards after catch guy who ever played this game up there in Buffalo playing in the Super Bowls, you wonder if we think of him a little bit differently if even there was one Super Bowl win out of those 4, but how dynamic that offense was. He also talked about Jim Kelly is actually here in Canton this weekend and how much that means to him with everything Jim Kelly's going through. And really what galvanized that team, the losses in these 4 Super Bowls, really galvanized them as a team, enabled them to keep getting back after the disappointment year in and year out of losing those Super Bowls.
Yeah, exactly. And you mentioned the fact the yards after the catch. How many times do you see Andre Reed go 5-7 yards down the middle and it's a 40-yard
right.
gain?
Yeah, just
boom, gone.
Just split the seam, took off, and it was over. And that's where it came from. He wasn't a huge downfield threat. He wasn't a huge possession guy. It was when he got the ball in his hands, he made plays and he found the end zone.
But then again, it was Jerry Rice.
No, really, no, he really wasn't. He was very similar.
Exactly.
Very similar. Could make plays and could make the tough catch. That's what Jerry Rice
did. Sure he did. I mean, he made phenomenal catches, but he really wasn't that burner down the field, you know, breaking it wide open and going 80 yards.
Right.
No, I mean, it was the West Coast. It was short stuff, boom, all of a sudden they're eating up yards.
Yeah, running up the seam and a poor linebacker trailing behind him about 8 yards past.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it was interesting listening to him talk about getting into the hall and what it meant. And, you know, I asked him if there was really any defining moment.
Right.
Because he mentioned people in the past that had a lot of influence on him that kept him on the right path, and that he was just one of these type of players that always gave 100%. And I just felt that I wanted, if there was an extra moment or a certain moment in his life, you know, that defined what type of player he became. And the answer was, yeah, not really defining, but it was interesting. And here's what he had to say.
Wait for this to finally happen. I mean, I'm a big fan of him. And I tell you, just in every year when it would come up short. You know, I was frustrated myself. I couldn't imagine what it was that was going through your mind when this thing would just continually happen.
It wasn't like it was frustrating. I think, again, I just respected the process. Was I disappointed? Of course. Because my family, every year, would have a party, and every year, they'd be disappointed every year. And I knew what was the process and all that, because I wanted it more for them than even myself. And, you know, to see that they had to go through that every year was, you know, I didn't like that. I said, I can take it. I can deal with it. But, you know, to see my mom would say, man, I hope this happens before I go to the grave. My mom would say crazy stuff. And to see her right now and see the whole family just, you know, they're walking on clouds, man. That makes me feel good. That makes me just go, you know what? This is for you guys.
What kind of words, like, what would you say to Tim Brown? I mean, he's another guy, a great guy from that era.
Well, I am, Tim should be the next guy. I'm going to, you know, say that publicly. I think he should be the next receiver to go in. I'm all about, me and Tim. I mean, me and Chris Carter and Michael, Jerry. You know, we all, and Timmy, we're all in the same era. And, nothing against Marvin Harrison and all these other guys that are coming up. But it's going to be even more difficult when T.O. and Randy Moss and all these guys are eligible. It's going to be more difficult to pick one. I think Timmy should be the next guy. There's no doubt about it. He's waited his time. And he's got the stats. He was a great receiver. And he deserves to be here. No doubt about it.
Andre, what's it mean to you to be here now after a long wait?
It means a lot. It means, just to be in here with my teammates. Because they waited for me. They were waiting for me to get in there. Like I said, it was the last piece of the puzzle to them. And for them to see me go in, and it feels like they're complete now. They're whole.
What do you remember most about those Bills teams? What made them so special?
I think we were just a team of, we just... resilient, man. We didn't care what it was. We never quit. And I think even during the Super Bowl losses, to go back every year like that for 4 years, that really defined what our team was about.
What about you, whether it's personality or work ethic, attitude, whatever, what got you to Canton? What attribute about yourself?
I think you just said it, the work ethic. I didn't settle to be mediocre. You know, if I went out and did something, and I put 100% in, I expected to get 100% out of it. So I went 100% all the time.
Was there someone in your early days, whether high school, college, that had a strong influence on you that you really give a lot of thanks to help get to you where you are now?
I can't probably say one person because there's a lot of people. I'd have to think about just one, but there was so many people that, again, were always patting me on the back. And we're always in my corner to keep me out of trouble, to do, don't go that way. Hey, if you go this way, this is going to happen. I mean, besides my dad and, my own family, my coaches and, geez, man, there's so many people. There's a lot of people.
Now when people see your bust in Canton, what do you want them to say about you? What do you want them to remember about you as a player?
Well, when they see their bust, I just want them to remember that, not only that guy was a great football player, he's an even better person. And the bus just represents what he did on the field. Everything else is kind of molded into that bust.
Congratulations. Obviously, you're here. But going back to your high school days, played quarterback.
Yeah.
How did it help you as a receiver?
Yeah, the offense we ran was a Veer offense, so I was able to run the ball a lot. Passed it a few times. I wasn't a great passer, but I was a better runner than a passer. So they gave me the opportunity, to develop my skills running, and that's why I became so good at it, of running after the catch, because I always had the ball in my hand, and it was either run or pass, and most of the time I ran the ball.
That's the mindset you have.
That's the mindset I have to have. That's right. Yep.
You were a guy across the middle a lot. You gained a lot of yards after the catch. Mm-hmm. So Jim Kelly said he liked about you so much. You could throw that short pass, and you would run 50 or 60 yards down the field.
Yeah.
I mean, was that something you set out to do, or is this something?
No, I think it just happened. I think our offense allowed me to do that. And that time the K-Gun offense was just a fast-paced offense. We had to get the ball in everybody's hands fast. And nowadays, there's so many different renditions of the K-gun. You know, the West Coast offense is kind of something like the K-gun. Get in his hands fast so he can make a play. You know, I think Ted Marchibota was way above his time, our offensive coordinator. And again, we had the right people at the right places.
Is there a player that either you played with or played against that you think should be here with you in the
Hall of Fame? There's probably a number of guys. Again, I mentioned Timmy. I think he, you know, exemplified, you know, what a receiver is about. He played a lot of years in the league, and he was very passionate about the game of football. And I think he deserves to be here.
Andre, when it comes to Super Bowls, besides actually playing in the game, what's the best part of a Super Bowl week for a player?
Media is always good, but I think the best part of it is just taking in, you know, the whole ambiance of the whole Super Bowl experience. Because now it's a spectacle. It's, you know, when I played in the first one in Super Bowl 25, you know, this is the Gulf War, so that was really a big thing. But the media was great media, but now the media is astronomical now. And for a guy that plays in it the first time, it could be overwhelming, no doubt about it. And I think, you know, after one or two times, we kind of got used to that. And the only thing we didn't do, we didn't play as well as we should have.
What did you tell guys coming into that week who hadn't experienced it?
I didn't have to tell them anything. I think they realized it. And, you know, we were there for a purpose. We weren't there to do anything else, and that was it.
You mentioned a lot of people in your past and maybe, you know, kept you on a path, don't take this path. Did you know of a defining moment to put you on the path that you referenced, you know, putting 100% all the time, and that's where you stayed?
Yeah. Well, I have so many different defining moments, maybe. Because my whole life was kind of like a, you know, went from one thing, went from Pop Warner to middle school or junior high school to college. There really isn't, I really can't give you like a defining moment. I just love to play the game of football. I think I was defined by how I approach the game, my mentality. That's the way I play.
That could have been your defining moment. You'd love the game of football.
Loved the game, man. Loved it.
Yes. Congratulations.
You got it.
Rick, another guy you love to see get into the Hall of Fame, Walter Jones, and this was a guy who, sitting down and just listening to him talk, and I know you had a chance to chat with him a little bit, and before you had come up there, I was just sort of hanging out listening to him talk. This guy, very engaging guy, so intelligent, and really the moment not being lost on him more than anyone else from what I noticed.
Yeah, that's for sure. Another Seminole making it to the Hall of Fame, and you know, he's very proud of that. He's in the Florida State Hall of Fame as well. But and they were talking about him and Derek Brooks being in there. But another one of these guys, they really are so appreciative of the different and enormous number of people that have influences on them from when they were little kids through high school, college, and so forth. And he was talking a lot about what it meant to make it to the Hall and what it meant to him. And I just kind of posed a question that, you know, reflecting back on the people that he had brought up, you know, who do you think was maybe prouder, him or them?
Right.
And, you know, here's what he had to say on that.
You know, you had Charlie Ward, and he was making plays, but if you really go back and look at that team, you know, Derrick Brooks was, the face of the team. You know, he was out there making plays, and he was doing the same thing he did in the pros, man, just owned the defense and made sure everybody was in their right position and made plays when he had to make plays. And I think that's the thing that you saw from a college, that he was understanding what was going on at all time. You know, he was a student of the game. And I think a lot of times, you know, a lot of these guys, they be student of the game. And he was a true student of the game, a guy that kind of watched everything and knew what was going on and was making sure that the defense was in the right place.
What are your fondest memories of your time at Florida State?
My funnest memory, man, probably was my when I went to Florida State and I was redshirting my first year, and the next year I got a chance to start. So for me to just be able to play in front of that crowd, you know, just because I never, you know, I was there for a year and I was, you know, I was doing everything except playing football, you know, going out playing on Saturday. So the first time I got a chance to walk out on that field, and I never, you know, a lot of those kids had been playing. And so for me to get out there and just play in front of 60-some thousand people, it was amazing, man. It was like, oh, man, I finally made it. So it was one of those moments, man, where you feel like, man, do I supposed to be out here? And, you know, still again, as soon as you get out there, you get, it's just like anybody in a position that just wants the play start, you playing football. So you get to the point where you say, okay, I'm playing football now. This is where I wanted to do. Those are my steps, and these were my plans to get there. And, you know, another memory was, you know, getting a chance to be number one throughout the whole year. And, you know, we got the chance to get to the national championship game, but we lost. But I always go back to, you know what Bobby Bowser, Coach Bobby, said to me when I was there. He told me that, you know, if you come to Florida State, you'll get a chance to play for a national championship. And I got a chance to do that. We didn't win, but, you know, he said that, you know, if you come to Florida State, you'll get a chance to play for a national championship. So that was one of my fondest memories there.
Did you follow the team this year at all?
I did. I was rooting for them. You know, coming from Alabama, you know, I was kind of like sending people, you know, I got family that loves Alabama, and I was just rooting, like, you know, let it pan out that, you know, Alabama get there. And in the end, Florida State, you know, they ran the table, and they was there, and I was happy for that. And, you know, the team is great. You know, I think they just, you know, they was on the cusp, but, you know, every year they, like, you know, they'll lose that game that they didn't need to lose or something like that. So I think, you know, that they, you know, if the coach had figured it out, you know, they figured out they got the recruits, and the guys are coming back to Florida State. So hopefully that thing, the tide turned, that, okay, Florida State is the team that everybody want to go down and play for.
And you get to go back for a game this year, too.
I do, man. I go back, and I think they recognize all the Hall of Famers. You know, that's, you know, Derrick Brooks, Deion Sanders. So that's still amazing, too, you know, just to go back to that, you know, because, you know, when I was there, you know, those guys was, like I say, those guys was the face. You know, I was there, and I went there, and I did my job, but those guys kind of set the standard. Those are the guys that I watched when I was like, man, this is the team I want to go play for. So, you know, just to go back and with the accomplishment that I'd have made in the NFL, to go back and be recognized is amazing. You know, that's where it all started for me. So it's going to be fun to go back there.
Do you have any hints for your speech tomorrow night, or at least theme-wise, kind of what you
want
to do?
Any hints, man? I would say it's just, you know, I'm just going to, you know, it's just giving thanks to the people that was part of my life, man. I think that's, you know, you get a chance to hang out with those, you know, all the guys that you got a chance to play with. So you, when you sit down and you think about it, you just say, you know, these are the guys and coaches that was special to me, you know. And I think everybody know by now that the most important thing to me is family. So, you know, I definitely will give homage to my family. I love them to death. And so, just, you know, just saying thank you, man. I think this is the moment where, you know, people want to hear Walter talk, and that's kind of like a hint, you know, to say, hey, I'm just going to say thank you. I think that's the whole key, and enjoying the moment, man. I think my family's going to be there, and they're going to enjoy it, and I'm going to enjoy it, and I'm looking forward to hopefully making it through it.
How special is it that your son is introducing you?
It's amazing. You know, I think he already done his part and stuff, and they done filmed him already. I'm like, man, they could have filmed us too, but, you know, I think it's a, you know, I haven't got a chance to see it or nothing like that. That's the only thing that you didn't have kind of like your hands in. So, you know, I'm waiting on that moment too. I'm waiting on a moment where, you know, I could get a chance to see that video. And he's been, like I say, he's been with me throughout it, man. And he's enjoying the moment too. He's enjoying being around all these great guys and stuff. So I think he's looking forward to it. I'm ready. He's ready. I think by tomorrow night, everybody's going to be ready to see what's going to happen.
How emotional is that going to be, though, following, seeing him up there talking about you, and then all of a sudden you have to
It's going to be very emotional, man. You know, I think when we got the call and New York, you know what I'm saying? Me and him, we share that together. So I think for us to be able to share that moment with everybody, that's going to be amazing, I think. And for him, you know, I think, you know, I always go back to when I was playing and stuff, or when I started playing the game, and, you know, you always say that, you know, you hope that you reach someone. And I hope that this is something that can, you know, put my son in a situation where he feel like, okay, this is what I want to do or not want to do. You know, you want to make his own decisions, but I think this is something that he'll never forget. You know what I'm saying? This is something that he'll always remember, man. And, you know, he might say, okay, this is what I want to do. This is where I want to end up. This is where, you know, let's get role reversal. You know what I'm saying? How amazing would that be? But then that's I just want him to be a part of that. He was the one from day one that I want him to be a part of. I want him to go along this journey with me. So, you know, I think he's very excited to be a part of it.
You know, you mentioned all the people that have been different in your life and you could, now that you've reached this peak, does it make you more proud, or do you think it makes them more proud?
Yeah, I think it makes them proud, you know. I think for them to be a part of, you know, I think for me, not being a very talkative person, so I think it's amazing that, you know, you did everything you can do on the football field for now, you know, once, you know, it's all said and done, you are for the vote and stuff, just to be able to be here now, you know what I'm saying? Now you have to get up and talk, you know, you have to go up and get up and still do the same thing that you've been doing for years to see that can you perform on a big stage. But then it's one of those stages where it's your moment, so whatever emotions that you have, it's one of those where it's okay. You know, you always play the game of football, and the coach always tell you something go wrong or something, control your emotions. And I think this is a moment where if something happens or you get emotional, you don't have to try to control them. You just let go and let it be and see what happens, you know. And I think for me, you know, I think people want to see that, want to see Walter's emotions and see what happened. And I'm ready. I'm ready to, you know, I don't know what, you know, I don't, this, like, you can already see, this gets me nervous too. So just, I'm looking forward to it. I'm taking deep breaths and getting ready for it, and my family is too. I think they're ready for it and see me on the stage.
It's good to see, because a lot of people don't actually relate. Sometimes it's humans, you know, and this really makes it real, you know.
It does. It's put everything in perspective. It's everything that you done did in your NFL career that, you know, now is here. And, you know, the thing that I enjoy the most is that, you know, my family and my friends, everybody's been through the whole process. It's not like you was there from day one. Okay, I remember him as, you know, for the fans, I remember him as a rookie. I remember when he got drafted. So you can relate to it. Like, I remember him coming in. So for me, that's what makes it feel good. So now I just saw Walter make it as a rookie, played 12 years, and now he's a Hall of Famer. So I think for the city of Seattle, I think that's amazing, because I can remember when I got drafted, and I think some people still can remember when I got drafted. So for me to be, you know, in the Hall of Fame, it's amazing. So I'm looking forward to that, and like I said earlier, to go out and represent the city and represent the organization.
And Rick, that brings us to the real celebrity of the group of seven going into the Hall of Fame this weekend, Michael Strahan. Rick couldn't get within about 25 yards of him. Do have some pictures. We'll get those up on the website. Couldn't get any of our own audio, but have some audio, and we'll play that for you here. What I'm struck by with Michael Strahan, now this is a guy I feel like, what was this, his second year of eligibility? This is a guy, obviously, I really remember playing, watching win Super Bowls just a couple years ago. Unfortunately, I don't want to say unfortunately good for Michael Strahan, but his celebrity status seems to be overshadowing really what he accomplished on the football field here this weekend.
Well, I think that's what it is in a way. He is just like you said, he's a celebrity now.
Right.
Some of these other guys are almost forgotten.
Right.
You know, they're not in the limelight and the spotlight. You see Strahan on every week doing
right.
shows and so forth. So, yeah, there's that aura of celebrity around him, and people flock to him. And I think he was – I'm not going to say, obviously, that he's – less moved by making it to the Hall,
no,
and is humble
not.
And so forth. But he's much more has the showmanship
yeah.
and the TV personality on than a lot of these other guys
do. Yeah, no question. But and here's what it is. You knew when the guy was playing, Rick, that we all knew that his next career was going to be on television. He's that engaging of a guy, that funny of a guy, that interesting of a guy. And now he's on that. What is that show? He's Regis now is what he is, isn't he? And so now there's millions of house frows all across the country who know who Michael Strahan is, which good for the Hall of Fame. Maybe that puts another set of eyes on it. But I think, to Michael Strahan's credit, in listening to him answer some of these questions that we're going to get into, still appreciates where he's at and what he's doing and the gravitas of what it is to go in the Hall of Fame. And it's, I believe, come Saturday night at the enshrinement, it's going to be less about celebrity Michael Strahan and more about Michael Strahan, the Hall of Famer.
I agree 100%, and I think you may see more of an emotional Michael Strahan, too.
Yeah, no question about it. So let's go to these few audio clips we have of Michael Strahan.
That's the great thing about it. We have definitely a jump start on a lot of things. And but all of us at the end of it, if we had good, bad things happen, we've all found our way to happiness. And that's just a great indication of the human spirit.
All right, Rick, that is the entire 2014 class of the Pro Football Hall of Famer. Also got a chance to sit down with some guys who have been through it. And one guy I got a chance to talk to, Harry Carson, doing a lot of, unfortunately, I think for Mr. Carson, every question he fielded before mine was about Michael Strahan and where Michael Strahan fits and then the NFL history and the Giants history. Somebody actually asked Rick, does Michael Strahan belong in the top five of New York Giants defensive players? Come on, what a dumb question. First thing I'm struck by is Harry Carson looked like he could have picked you and me both up to this day, spun us around like pizzas and threw us through the wall. This guy is still just a massive man, just so impressive. And so I got a chance to ask him, Rick, what advice he would give as somebody who has been through it, what advice he would give.
Yeah, that's no question. And Harry Carson, you know, again – you know, showing my age, I remember Harry Carson well. He was a great player. And he mentioned earlier before your question, I believe he played defensive end early on.
In
college or whatever, and you know, transitioned to a linebacker. So you know, if he's playing defensive end before, he's a good sized guy. And you're right, he could have pizzaed us right into the wall any day.
Yeah, just an impressive physical specimen. So like I said, Rick, I got a chance to ask him what advice he would give to the seven new members going into the Hall of Fame, going into Hall of Fame weekend, and here's what he had to say.
Well, he was able to, and I know exactly where he's coming from because I used to play defensive end before I was converted to linebacker. And you are able to use your speed and your quickness against certain guys to get by them. And you have to have that speed, not just the size, but you got to have the speed and the leverage, you know, to be able to, you know, use your upper body and use your arm to, you know, flip guys. Reggie White did a masterful job of flipping offensive linemen who tried to block him. And Michael did the same thing. So he was very effective coming off of the edge as a left defensive end.
I know it's a hypothetical, but could he have played with your team in 86 when he had a role?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. You know, there's certain players that could play in any generation of football, and I think Michael was one of those guys. And, you know, I think he would have fit in, you know, pretty well. I mean, the thing about him is he played with passion, and he enjoyed playing, and he lifted up the guys around him. And so, you know, he was able to get guys around him to play the way that they're capable of playing. And so, you know, I just think that he probably could have played almost in any era, because from a leadership standpoint, but also from a talent standpoint as well.
There have been so many great players, great defensive players in Giants history, like yourself, Lawrence. Michael said he's kind of in awe to even be considered in that category.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Should he be considered in that category as one of the greatest of all time?
Giants?
Yeah.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah. You know, he really has distinguished himself, and you know, he's done an excellent job of, you know, the guys who have done well There's not a whole lot of difference between an Andy Robustelli and a Michael Strahan or a George Martin, even though George Martin isn't here. But, you know, the guys were effective, you know, playing the role in which they played. And you know, I just think that, you know, he is probably one of the greatest Giant defensive players. He's probably surpassing somebody. I don't know exactly who, but you know, obviously Lawrence is at the top of the list. But you know, Michael has to be in the top five or six.
What was he? You were at the luncheon today, Harry.
Yeah.
What was he like at the luncheon today?
He was all ears. You know, Michael and I have been sort of talking over the last couple of years, and then when he made it, you know, I called him and congratulated him, and my wife probably has a closer relationship with him, texting him, and you know, he's been very humble about this whole situation. I think, you know, by not going in last year, I think he sees it from a different perspective. But I think when he was just sitting there and listening to those guys in that room, he probably reverted back to being a kid, because I think that one of the things that came out of some of the guys who talked, and everybody in that room is in awe of one another. You know, Ronnie Lott spoke, and if you're a defensive player, you hold Ronnie Lott as one of the great, you know, contemporary defensive players. But Joe Green, who normally doesn't say anything, Joe Green spoke, and you could hear a pin drop. And to hear words of wisdom from Joe Green for these guys, and I was looking at Michael. I mean, he was taking it all in, and you know, it was about being a Hall of Famer. It was about welcoming them to this very exclusive club. And I think that, you know, you come in here, and I know Michael has a lot of notoriety because of television and so forth, but I think, and I told him, when he's here, he is no better than anybody else. Everybody's on the same level, you know, regardless of what your name is or what you did. And everybody's in awe of those guys in that room because they are the greatest players who've ever played in the National Football League.
Did you speak? Or?
I didn't speak. I spoke earlier when the commissioner met with the players, and I spoke, but that was on an altogether different matter. But you know, I think he was humble. It's going to be interesting to hear, you know, his speech, and even more interesting to know how he is going to respond to his speech. You know, whether he's going to get emotional, because, you know, Chris Carter and myself, you know, we told him, you get up there and you think you've got it all together, and then all of a sudden it comes to you that you didn't do it by yourself, that there are many people who helped you to get to that level, to this point. And you know, it's just going to be interesting to hear what he has to say.
So what kind of advice did you give him for that?
That has to be private. I have to keep that to myself. I can't share it.
In general, looking back on your enshrinement, what advice would you give to the guys who are going in tomorrow?
You know, write your speech down. Because you have a tendency to wander, and you have a tendency to leave certain people out that need to be acknowledged. And you know, I left a lot of people out because I just had this one thing I wanted to get off my chest, and then, you know, I went from there. But I'm pretty sure he'll do a great job.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And finally, Rick, the last guy we got a chance to talk to is a guy I remember very fondly, and another guy, you know, how many times today have we mentioned Jerry Rice and Tim Brown, and I believe we've said the words Marvin Harrison and T.O. and Randy Moss. Steve Largent's name doesn't come up. Another guy, I mean, this guy, I believe, was held the record for receptions,
yes,
was
did.
It, Rick, for a good period of time, and seems, I don't want to say gets forgotten, but doesn't get mentioned in the same page as a lot of these other more high-profile players.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, maybe it has something to do, you know, playing for Seattle. It's hard to say. You know, it didn't make it to the Super Bowl. And, you know, made a lot of catches. You know, Jim Zorn and some of these guys. I tell you, he was a senator, too, I believe, wasn't he?
Yeah, I know, yeah, I believe politics. He was. I knew he was congressman, senator. Yeah. He was something like that. I'll tell you what, you said it when we were walking back. For 60 years old, the man looks good.
Yeah.
He's still in fantastic shape.
Boy,
he looks
you're
like
not
he can
kidding,
play
man.
Now.
There's no question about that. He is not that big. He's all he was,
right.
You know, pretty slight build as far, you know, for NFL player. But I tell you what, he looks in great shape.
Yeah, and to your point, sitting there at the table, you had to take a moment to think about who he was, because he doesn't look like a professional athlete sitting at the table, not out of shape, just such a slight build, such a small guy. So he was talking a little bit about when it sinks in finally that you're a member of this Hall of Fame, and here's what he had to say.
Were there any skills on the field that you acquired that you're able to translate off the field?
Sure. Playing as a team, I think that's a goal that translates to any field that you're in. But preparation, intensity, your job, all those things, learning to play your part in a team, I think all those things are important in whatever you do.
You bet. Before a game, worked for any grand fans are coming in before games. I do these things where I ask people questions, and I always ask them their favorite all-time player. And a lot of people still say you. What does that mean to you?
Well, it's flattering. I obviously didn't know you were doing that, but it is flattering. But, you know, what I understand now, I'll be 60 next month. Now that's the first, yes, it'll be next month. You know, you realize that fame is fleeting. And I guess coming to gain a sense of that, you know, I'm not upset to know that there'll be a time when I could walk the streets of Seattle and nobody will recognize me, and that's okay.
Yeah, because when people tell me that, I always go, gee, that's great, and I'm sure Steve will think it's great, too.
Yeah.
That he's still your favorite.
Yeah, yeah. It's flattering. Very flattering.
That's why we have the hall. Fame is not right. Fading here.
That's true. I didn't think about that. Yeah, they won't get rid of the bus, will they? It always have my name on it.
Have you done that since you've been here? Walked through that. The
I
new
have.
Room?
Yeah.
Like you mentioned, coming here and seeing all these people. I mean, is that just kind of again that affirmation?
Yeah.
Look who I'm included
yeah.
with.
Yeah. You know, I still think it's a dream to be included in the, you know, the greatest players in the history of the game, coaches and everybody else. Is just really the best compliment you could ever have as a professional football player.
What do you think, maybe you can connect because of the position you played, but what do you think's gone through Andre Reed's mind over this, whether it be the jacket tonight or the luncheon today, tomorrow night?
Well, I think in Andre's case, I think he is... I know Andre, so I know he's a tremendously grateful guy. He's not a guy that was, you know, shouting about how he should be in the Hall of Fame and all that kind of stuff. And yet he's here, and they can't ever take that away from him, and it's well deserved. So I'm really happy for him. But in terms of his emotions for this evening, I can just tell you what my emotions were. And it was a dreamlike experience the whole time, and it wasn't until, you know, maybe two or three, maybe a month after I got out of the hall, and maybe even the next time I came to the Hall of Fame to celebrate somebody else's entrance, that I really realized that my statue's still in there. You know, that's pretty cool. My bust is still there. So. But it's, like I said, it's very fun.
You guys, Warren said that for him, that was when he slipped on the jacket.
Uh-huh.
Okay, I'm in the Hall of Fame. Tez says it was seeing that bust after he gave his speech. What was the time for you?
It was more, I'd follow more in line of Cortez. Putting the jacket on was cool and all that stuff, but it was when the bust was unveiled and somebody said, "Welcome to the Hall of Fame." That's when it really kind of started to sink in anyway.
But like you said, Dream, I would think that's, really, that's me? You know,
yeah.
That's
it. Yeah, well, it is. I mean, you're so busy, number one, that you hardly have time to catch your breath. But when you do and you look up and you think, wow, that's really cool.
Derrick Brooks, linebacker, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He's got his casual walking shoes on this morning, too. Again, from the East, from Allentown, Pennsylvania.